But I want to ask you a question here about designing cars. And maybe you can quickly talk about a team and the process for designing cars, whether for a complete design or for maybe headlights or taillights. Must be brainstorming, must be old-fashioned, just drawing on a piece of paper, and you have different kinds of people that are in that meeting. Is that true?
Yes. It's and there's been a big change that has come about. In the old way of doing car design is you have what I used to call silos. You have styling, and you got a guy who's vice president of styling, and he's got all the stylists. And then you got another silo, it's engineering. And then you got another silo, you know, it's manufacturing. And then you got another silo, and that's purchasing. And what would happen is styling would come up with a design for whether it's an entire car or just a makeover or sheet metal or grill changes or whatever. And then they would go and give the engineers, they say, here's the car and the changes that we would make. So then it goes all the way up. All the engineering guys look, it was all the way up to the top. And finally, engineering said, we can't make that car that way. You're going to have to make these changes. So it comes down that silo and goes over back to styling. Styling reworks it. They send it back to engineering. The engineering goes through it and they say, okay, fine. Then they give it to procurement, and procurement says, oh, I'm having trouble. I haven't got suppliers who can do this. Is there a way we could make this kind of a change? And then it goes back over to styling, and it goes up again, and it goes over. And this is why it was taking 3+ years to turn out a new car. Now, the Japanese were doing it in 18 months or less. And the reason what they did is they had what they call the platform teams. And the platform teams have, instead of it being the silos, they have all of those people are working together as a team. So that when the team is finished, it's a go deal. It's not like, oh, we got to go back and we got to do this. All this is discussed and caught early on, and everybody has to speak up. Now, sales and marketing, they're also in their silos, but they don't have much to say about it, except, you know, they've got to come up with the numbers and how they're going to market the car and so forth. But that was the thing that we had at Jeep. At Jeep, because we were small, we had this platform approach. And Chrysler had these silos. So one of the biggest advantages, in addition to getting Jeep, was they took the whole Jeep team over en masse. Every one of the Jeep employees, engineers, etc., were brought over. And then what they did, they went in and changed the rest of Chrysler engineering manufacturing to this platform approach.
Wow.
That was really a big plus for Chrysler.
Yeah. These designers, are they a special breed, a different kind of people that come in with all these ideas, and are they kind of treated as stars because they come up with the ideas?
Well, they used a lot of young people that have got, you know, have been through art school or have got just innate capacity for art and design. And they're the ones that work up, you know, all kinds of, you know, using the dimensions that they're required to design to. And they come up with all these things. And then they've got, you know, a normal kind of management with a supervisor or a manager or flight VP, and they cull out what they think are the best ones, and then they'll have presentations, and everybody will look and critique, and finally, you know, they take their best one in their view and present it. But you have to keep getting people from design schools and from especially the West Coast, because they seem to have a real feel for that kind of lifestyle, and that they see out in California that's so different from anything on the East Coast.
Hmm. So largely they come from California, you're saying, these design minds.
Yes.
Because they are uniquely different. Yeah. I was wondering, are any design secrets slip out and given to competition, and does that ever happen?
Well, it happens, but sometimes it happens through magazines, writers. Sometimes it happens by, there was one gentleman who made a great living. He would, he'd buy the most expensive kind of camera equipment, telescopic, and he would go and find a position, maybe in a tree, or he'd bring a ladder, and he'd be looking at the test tracks that all the manufacturers had, and taking photographs, looking for the newest models. So usually when they took a vehicle out in the street for testing, they'd camouflage it, as I mentioned earlier. But on their own ovals, they usually didn't do that. And then they would have first picture of the new Cadillac V6, you know, and they'd sell these photos. So you find out that way. I had one thing at Ford where this is way back. General Motors and Ford had these big boxy vans, work vans that plumbers use, electricians use, and so forth. The Econoline and the cargo van. And we found out through one of these magazine people that they were working on a sliding door. These vans had these double doors that opened this way. And a sliding door in the eastern part of the country or in any major city would be a major advantage to, you know, that type of a profession in terms of being able to get in, to get equipment, get out, pull equipment in or out, and the like. So that would give them a great advantage. And we were doing very well in our vans. And when I heard that, I said, we've got to put it on the Econoline. And I went to see the product planning people, and I went to see our engineers. And, you know, clearly it took very little convincing to tell them what was going to happen. And they were all in favor. So we put together a paper that indicated here's what we want to do, here's what it was going to cost, and how much time it would take, and so forth. We brought that up to the vice president of truck operations. And this guy was extremely bright, but he was like he could be like a little old lady. And when he made a decision, it was almost like the decision made itself, because he would drag it out so long. He knew more about that particular project than the guys that were doing it. I mean, he would put you through this drill. And the problem is, we used to say that he'd get us in a room and we'd be there for hours. He never had to go to the John. He didn't drink coffee. He didn't drink tea. You know, he was a real Puritan kind of a guy. And he said, no, we're not going to do it. Why not? I want to see some research. We can't research very well when we don't have, competition isn't out yet, and we don't have anything. So it's just considering what the advantage would be for them in the marketplace if they had it and we don't have it.
And they, again, is who?
Chrysler. Okay. I mean, Chevrolet.
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 Right. Okay.
And he refused to do it unless we could find some way of proving that here's what would cost us in lost sales, or here's how many you could sell. And so you could go out and you would have to build a property and then go out and research it somewhere at quite an expense, when it was, to everybody else, it was like, duh. Okay, what do you have to, you know, they're doing it. We've got to have it to be competitive. And every time we went to him, he'd pound us down on it. And I became a particular target because that was, I was the light truck marketing plans guy. I kept the one always going. And that's, again, one of my faults is if I think I'm right, I will be in your face until you tell me, if I see you one more time, I'm going to fire you. And until they say that, I keep coming back. A little too persistent sometimes.
But it paid off here, didn't it?
Well, here's what happened. No, it didn't pay off. I couldn't convince them.
Oh.
But, again, fortune, good fortune. Henry Ford decided he was going to put this gentleman in charge of Philco Ford in Philadelphia. And the guy they were going to replace him with is a guy who was brilliant guy who he would come up every day, he'd come up with, you know, maybe 30 new ideas, and maybe none of the 30 were good, but then one time he'd have one that'd be absolutely brilliant. Like, he was just a great, you know, visionary kind of a guy. He came in to replace Caldwell. The very first day he was at his job, I had called ahead of time, wanted to have breakfast with him at 6 o'clock or 6:30, whatever it was, in the dining room at the building. I went in, and I had this paper, and I talked about it and showed him the paper. We got to have it. And then they put a rush on, and we got it, and it turned out to be a dynamite requirement for those city professional guys that were plumbers, electricians, and so forth.
Would have been the Econovan?
Yes.
That's the name of it. Right,
yes.
Right, right. Is that today? Where is that standing today, that model?
Well, that's still available.
It's still available.
They still build that. And
you pressing the issue, you got to feel good about that when you see a sliding door, because that became a very popular thing.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, that technology and engineering went into minivans then, later.
Yeah.
And so the experience that you had in doing it on that just helped pay off years later.
Okay, so then did you beat Chevrolet coming with that, or did they beat you?
Oh, they beat us to market. But then we came in, you know maybe it might have been a year later.
Okay. And again, you got wind of that sliding door from a
writer, a magazine guy.
That's an interesting story.